Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host Tony Smith and Ryan O'Halloran.
Hello, Jaguars Nation. I am Fat Tony. Ryan O'Halloran alongside Mike Dempsey up in New York, still on the island of Manhattan. We'll catch up with him a little bit later on in the program, trying to get him on for a couple minutes during the 11 o'clock hour today to talk about what he's doing with some fantasy football stuff up there in New York. He'll be back with us on Thursday here on the program. And as I said, Ryan O in studio with us from the Times Union, who covers the Jags for the Times Union. You got your 53-man roster projection in the paper over the weekend, and so we'll be talking about that a little bit today.
If I would have had to guess the mascot, I would have been wrong.
But we'll get into the 53-man projection. Obviously, the Tom Brady appeal hearing going on today as well, so we'll get into some of our thoughts on that, as well as Russell Wilson once again speaking with the media yesterday as the contract negotiations continue between those two sides up in Seattle. But you all know what the news is right now regarding the Jacksonville Jaguars, at least the immediate news, and that is the announced retirement of Curtis as the mascot of the Jacksonville Jaguars. So Jacksonville will not be played by Curtis for the first time in 19 years that the mascot has been around. We've been talking to the cat over the course of the last 19 years, and he's gotten into his fair share of trouble around the league, including last year with the Ebola towels when the Pittsburgh Steelers were here. So, look, I'm trying to soften the hard heart of Ryan O'Halloran today. That is my goal. I'm trying to soften the hard heart of Ryan O'Halloran, who's only been here for the last handful of years. And obviously, you're not a big fan of the conversation shifting to a mascot in the National Football League.
Well, it feels like the San Diego Chicken or something. But you mentioned, not having talked to anybody. The incident with the towel with Pittsburgh. If you want to call it, was that a last straw? It just seems a little fishy that somebody this popular and so good at what he does and so beloved by the fans is all of a sudden no longer working for the team.
Yeah, I don't know. Who knows what the backstory with this thing is, and who knows if we'll ever really know what the backstory is, or if Curtis just decided 19 years of being a wild man in that costume was enough. But look, as someone who has been around to several different stadiums across the league, I have absolutely no reservation in saying Jacksonville is the best mascot in the NFL. And with the baseball teams and basketball teams that I've seen, I have very little reservation in saying Jacksonville is the best mascot in North American sports and has been for a while now. So like I said, today is about softening the hard heart of Ryan O'Halloran, who sat down with me today and said, are we going to talk about the mascot? And I said, yeah, we're going to have to talk about the mascot.
See, in that case, let's just take, let's just hear from other people then, because I have no memories.
I know you don't, and that's why I want to open it up to everyone out there today. 641-1010 is the phone number. What have been your personal interactions with the cat? What have been some of your favorite memories of watching the cat in action on the field? I know the story from the Morton Anderson miss in 96 is still epic. He thought he was going to lose his job after the first year, and we'll tell that story again, I'm sure, at some point in the show today, and I'll share some of my favorite memories with the guy. It's also the fan feedback spotlight question of the day. What is your favorite memory of Jackson DeVille? So like I said, we're trying to enlighten a guy who's only been here for a couple years. And look, I agree with you to a point, Ryan, that, look, it is a mascot in the end, and you don't want the conversation about your franchise to be about the mascot and how great he is. And I get that part of it, but I don't think it takes away from how good Curtis has been as that mascot. And it's not just what he does on the field. It's what he does away from the field and in the community and how interactive he's been with the fans of this city for the last 20 years.
So do they have a backup in place? Or is this going to be they're casting a wide net?
I don't know.
So
I don't know. And, I just heard Curtis on with the Boys of the Drill, and he was saying that, he doesn't want to see the mascot change. He just wants to see somebody else do the Jackson DeVille thing, and we'll see what exactly that looks like. But, look, send us your memories of Jacksonville. We want to hear what your favorite memories are of the Cat here in Jacksonville over the course of the last 19 years. You can call in with those as well and share your personal stories. I've already gotten quite a few on Twitter. I apologize for the confusion. The story I didn't get confirmed here in the building until after I'd already sent out a different question of the day. So we changed the question of the day for the first time ever this morning with the announcement of the Cats retiring. So, yeah, if you have any memories that you'd like to share, come on in and try to soften the hard heart of one Ryan O'Halloran. That doesn't mean we're only going to talk Jacksonville today. We'll obviously get into some other more football-specific topics, including that 53-man roster, and are there any big surprises on that 53-man roster? I mean, it's difficult to project in June exactly what the roster is going to look like, especially on that bottom half. A few minor surprises in there, so we'll get into that. Like I said, Tom Brady and his hearing is going on right now in the Deflategate, and it seems like he has chosen the path of all or nothing when it comes to what's going to happen with this entire thing, and if he's going to appeal beyond this, if Roger Goodell, who's overhearing it, says, nope, four games, and the next step for Tom Brady would be federal court, and what would that mean for him? We'll get into that as well today here on the program. Ryan, I know you're going on vacation after you get done with the show today, correct?
Yes, yes.
Where are you heading?
I have a flight later this afternoon. Knock on wood. That takes me from Jacksonville to Minneapolis into Fargo, North Dakota. See my parents for a couple days. Haven't been back up there in a year. Have seen them, obviously, between them. But
right.
So it'd be nice to take a deep breath here because there is no off season. This is like a couple weeks here, but like the rest of the people in this building, it'd be good to take some time off.
Yeah, I mean it's good to get away. I'm trying to figure out when I'm going to get away for a week or so in July before we get back into training camp. What is the plan for you guys over at the paper during this 5 weeks as we get ready for training camp?
Well, I'm currently dueling with my digital desk about the mascot story, so that's always fun. I'm going to still have a Jaguars Insider every Sunday, so that'll a lot of leftover stuff. And then we have some stuff planned throughout the next couple of Sundays to sort of feed the beast a little bit, and so that will be, we have a plan. So it's just a matter of, getting those stories in there. But today takes precedent.
Today the story, obviously, the Cat retiring. 641-1010 is the phone number. You can also get in the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line at 641-1010. We have our first caller on the line. He wants to talk a little bit about Jackson. We'll go to him right now. Sean, what's up this morning, buddy?
Hello.
Hey, Sean, what's up?
Okay, yeah, hey, I just texted y'all a little message. I think we should start a grassroots movement to make Jacksonville the next inductee in the private Jaguar.
Yeah, but Jackson's not going away, buddy. I appreciate the call, Sean, but Jackson's not going away. It's just Curtis isn't going to be wearing the thing anymore. I'm not sure that you put Curtis Dvorak in the pride of the Jaguars. I don't know.
Correct. Especially with the great players who aren't up there.
Right. I don't know if you do that.
I mean, if they left on good terms, and this is a mutual decision, first home game of the year, I bring them out to the 50-yard line. I have give them a framed jersey with the number 19 on it. I say thank you for your service.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm sure that's probably something that could be in the works when it comes to the two sides in this entire thing. But no, they're not going to put Jacksonville in the pride of the Jaguars because, based on what we've heard at least today, Jacksonville is not going away, everybody. The mascot's not going away. If you feel like they should retire the mascot, that's a different story.
Yeah, that is another question.
Yeah.
Is, eventually the team is going to send something out. Okay, what's their plan? Is like, are they going to, I would be stunned if they just move on. But this is another link to the previous ownership that is no longer here. But, I mean, anybody who goes to a game and they see the biggest cheers on the field is for the costume.
Yeah.
That means you got to keep it out there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't think the Cat's going away. Just the man who's done it for the last 19 years better than anybody else has done it is deciding to step away from that costume. So if you have your own memories of that please share them with us today, and we'll try to show Ryan why we love this guy as much as we have for the last 19 years. That's a fan feedback spotlight question of the day as well. So you can react on Twitter at 1010XL Fat Tony, at Ryan O'Halloran, at 1010XL Tyler today, as we will get to some of your fan feedback spotlight responses a little bit later on the program. Mike Dempsey coming up in the 11 o'clock hour from the island of Manhattan. We're going to get into that 53-man roster projection.
First time I've ever heard the island of Manhattan referred. Such a way. Yeah. I'm going to have to keep going to that.
The island of Manhattan, and we'll get to the 53-man roster projection in the paper here in just a moment as well. You can check it out for yourself at jacksonville.com as we roll along here on a Tuesday edition of Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
The only people I'm concerned about entertaining and the only people that I'm concerned about leaving my legacy with on a game day basis is Jacksonville fans. If they like Jackson and they like the character, that's all I need. I don't need another city or anybody, and that's what I kind of say to people. We don't need this ESPN writers or TV people don't like coming to Jacksonville and they want to bash our city because they didn't have a good time in Super Bowl 2005. I don't give a crap. They don't have to like this city. The people who live in this city love this city, and that's who I'm here to entertain, and that's who I work for. So whether I'm on ESPN, it doesn't matter to me. It matters to me that the 65,000 people in the stands on game day that I get a chance to entertain. That's what I concern myself with.
Nobody's done it better. Nobody. The Cat, Curtis, calling it a day after 19 years. Those the comments from Curtis, I think, on here with the station last year at some point in time during the whole last August. So, yeah, the Cat calling it after 19 years. Continue to share your reaction to the Cat calling a career after 19 years. Look, I know the first caller we had said we need to put Jacksonville in the pride of the Jaguars. Everybody, I know I'm getting a lot of that right now. I need you to step back for a moment, all right? I just need you to step back from the emotion of the day for a moment with Jackson calling it a career. I need you to step back and realize that you're already a team that nationally they want to take shots at left and right. Do you really want to be the team that is putting your mascot in the pride of the Jaguars while there are players that are not in there yet? There are the Jimmy Smiths and the Keenan McCardells of the world that aren't up there yet. There's Maurice Jones-Drew who will be going up there. I get it. He's been probably the most entertaining thing about game day for a decade, which doesn't say much about what's been going on game day for the past decade when it comes to Curtis. But that doesn't mean that you should be putting him in the pride of the Jaguars. I get that everybody loves the guy, and I know why everybody loves the guy, and it's all well deserved, but pride of the Jaguars, guys. Settle down. I did like the idea. I got somebody on Twitter that told me that we should rename the light tower that he jumps off of, the Dvorak Tower. That's pretty cool. Like, I like the idea of that. And if the next mascot is going to be jumping off of it, it'll be from the Dvorak Tower. That's kind of cool, because I don't know what else you would name a light tower at a football stadium, right? I don't see that getting in the way of anything in particular. But pride of the Jags, slow down, guys. Slow down. There are players that need to be up there long before you're putting a mascot in that kind of ring of honor. Come on. Come on. But that doesn't mean we don't need to take a look back today at the last 19 years and what the Cat has done for this organization from a game day perspective. And he has been the most entertaining thing about game day for the better part of a decade. And that is what it is. And he's been the best at doing it in the National Football League.
If you talk to my office like I have just been, you'd think the damn team was moving.
Guys, you gotta break through this cold hard shell of Ryan O'Halloran today. We need the story so that Ryan can understand the love. But do want to get into the roster, Ryan. I know running back is a position that everybody's been talking about for the last several weeks anyway. Basically, since the draft, T.J. Yeldon gets picked in the second round. Your 53-man roster is up on Jacksonville.com. And T.J. Yeldon gets picked in the second round. He's basically being put in the spot as the starting running back for the franchise from the moment he walks in the door, essentially. And that's in part because of what we saw from the guys that are still here from last year. Toby Gerhart didn't live up to it. Denard Robinson was pretty good in the limited opportunities that he had last year, but still doesn't look like the guy that you want to hand the starting position of running back to in the NFL yet, but certainly has developed over the last couple of years. But you would think those three guys are pretty much locks. Yeldon, Gerhardt, Robinson, and then there's a pretty hefty debate once you get past those three.
There's a two-pronged debate. Is first part is how many tailbacks do you keep? Second part of it is who's going to be. So
right. Do you have a fullback? Do you keep five potentially?
So do you? Is it a bunch of guys for two spots, or the way I projected, a bunch of guys for one spot? I put Corey Grant out there. Sort of is a little bit of a leap, but I think he can help this team in more than one special team. Can he? If you see him on the field a lot of time, if he makes a team and he's on the field as a tailback, that means something's probably wrong. But he can cover a punt as a gunner. We saw that rookie camp. He's going to get in the mix as a kick returner. And a guy who runs that fast, you sort of like, okay, you try and find a place for him. And so that's why I gave him the edge over Bernard Pierce and Storm Johnson.
Now, what are the odds? When we do get to camp, obviously Corey's a guy who could wind up on a practice squad if they feel that way about him. Maybe he's not quite ready to be on an active roster on game day. What do you think would be more likely between Storm Johnson and Bernard Pierce?
I would think Pierce, just because you read the tea leaves, and Storm was banged up, and Pierce has experience. He's done it, not too much, but he has had some games in this league. Gus poked him publicly, which is not in his nature, and that should have served as a wake-up call for Storm. Problem is, he only practiced once or twice after that because of the back injury, so camp's going to be big for him. The issue they're going to face with Grant, and that's why I put Armbrister and Sterling on there, is do they think they'll clear waivers and get put on the practice squad? A guy like Grant, if he flashes during the preseason, a team will say, maybe we can catch that kind of lightning in a bottle and claim him. So those are the kind – remember, 2 years ago and even last year, you didn't really have these kind of conversations because the bottom of the roster was bottom. I mean – You're not stashing anybody outside of Josh Wells.
No.
Because they could just sail right through waivers. So it's a different kind of problem for the Jaguars to have, but it's a good kind of problem.
No, it is. It's a good problem that you're going to be cutting guys that potentially other teams may want to take a look at. It is interesting, Grant, because of his speed, and the position of running back in the league is one where you basically come in and you can help right away or you can't, right? And like, it's just one of those positions where you either can or you can't in the National Football League, and I think there would be teams that would probably be willing to take a chance on a guy that can run the way Corey Grant can on an active roster.
Yeah, and the kick return spot, it's being so diminished because of the number of touchbacks, so you got to be able to help a team in another way.
Right.
Do you look at Bernard Pierce and Toby Gerhardt, do they do the same kind of things? I think Toby gets the edge there. So it's I'm sticking with four tailbacks because who can you use better, a fifth tailback or a fifth tight end or a sixth receiver? You look at roster value, and I think that's how they look at it when they're looking at those last five, six spots on the 53. Who can help them the most in a game? And is it a Ben Kayak?
Yeah.
So
yeah, we'll see. And again, we don't have a real idea of what they want to do with all these players yet because they're still installing things in this offseason, especially on the offensive side of the ball. So you can only tell so much out there in minicamp and in the OTAs. But sticking with the running back position, I think we all kind of feel like T.J. Yeldon's going to be their horse this year, and that's why they spent that pick on him where they did in the second round, is because they felt like they needed one of those two and had an opportunity to go get one in T.J. Yeldon. The roles for Gerhardt and Denard, how do you think they play out when everything is said and done?
I think Gerhardt is your third down guy, short yardage guy. He showed in Minnesota he could do all facets that require on third down, pass, protect, catch it, run it. I think Denard is your tailback who subs for a beginning of a series or replaces Yeldon for a play or two if he has to come out the field. So it's weird. It takes some massaging of the depth chart because there's no fullback, but Gerhardt's not a fullback. He's your third down back. So you almost have two categories, tailback and third down back. Tailback, Yeldon, Denard, third down back, Gerhardt. And I think that's where Pierce will have to win his spot.
Yeah, Yeah, and Pierce is, I remember when they brought Pierce in after the trouble he had up in Baltimore, the idea, we all knew there wasn't going to be a fullback on this roster, and it was, with Olsen coming over here from Oakland, is he going to be the guy who kind of plays that Marcel Reese role in this offense? And in my own head, even at the time, I was like, I guess technically he could, but I don't know that Greg Olsen has an offense where he needs a Marcel Reese. It's, I don't know what Greg Olsen's offense is, to be honest with you.
That's what surprised me about their proclamation of no fullback, is that you look at some Oakland games last year, they had a lot of that. So it's obviously some kind of philosophy shift. And, you know, do you, like, if you, you're going to face a third one.
Right.
And who do you put, you know, who do you want, you need, you sort of need a lead blocker. Is it going to be a Nick Jacobs? Is it going to be a Mercedes Lewis, you know, lining up there?
Could Toby do it?
Yeah. I mean, possibly. So it's, they obviously feel good about their options. I mean, the fullback in this offense on this team last year, Ta'afo, played like 15% of the snaps. So we're not, you're not losing a lot of snaps, but it does, it'll be interesting to see how they line up in those kind of situations.
Sticking with the offensive side of the ball, let's go to the wide receiver position in your projected 53. Again, you can check it out on Jacksonville.com. And it's easy to figure out what the top four are going to look like, right? At least the four guys that we know for a fact these guys are going to be here. And it's Allen Robinson, Allen Hurns, Marquise Lee, Rashad Green are going to be a part of this roster when everything is said and done. It's after that that it gets, now you're starting to ask some serious questions, because you need help in special teams from whoever's going to be your fifth and sixth wide receiver. Rashad Green may be able to give you some punt return from that four spot, but you have a guy that you cut last year.
My guy.
Your guy, Ace Sanders, making the team this year.
Ha! That was funny. receivers, another thing, is if they decide to give Rashad Green full-time punt return duties, okay, does that mean you can only, does that mean you only have to keep five receivers? Because I put Ace on there because without a doubt, if he's not the punt returner, is there space for him? I would think that. I don't think, in the way this depth chart sets up, I don't think Ace helps you enough just as a receiver to make this team. And I'd say the same thing about Doss. So I think Sterling is a guy that sticks in the realm of a Shatley or Wells last year, where he's going to be a redshirt guy. Somebody would take a chance on a guy with that kind of size on the waiver wire. So, you know, does Copeland hasn't been able to stay healthy. Tony Washington's an unknown. Aurelius Ben is a veteran who hasn't played in a while because of injury. I mean, I think those guys are facing an uphill climb because of the fact those first four are so locked in, and I think the sixth guy is locked in as well.
You know, it's Tony Washington's a guy. I only saw him out at the rookie minicamp. That's the only thing that I've seen him do. I was impressed with him out at the rookie minicamp, at least at the practice I was at. I thought he looked pretty good. I don't know what that means for him as far as trying to make an active 53-man roster. That's still a long, tough climb for that guy, and I do tend to agree with you. A guy like Neil Sterling, with his size, and he looks like he can run a little bit, is not a guy that you're probably going to be able to hide on a practice squad. Probably not going to be able to hide him on a practice squad, though you may be able to. But it's, how much do you want to rely on Rashad Green if you really do want to work him into
the offense
as well, right? Like, and we saw that a couple years when they drafted Ace Sanders, because of injuries, how much they had to rely on him as that slot receiver that year. He wound up catching 51 passes or whatever it was. Everyone was like, is that affecting what he's doing in special teams? And for rookies that come into this league, you already got enough that you're thinking about. Do you really want Rashad Green to have to be thinking about all of that preparing for a game day? Or do you want to have that fifth receiver on your team, whether it be Ace Sanders or Tandon Doss or whoever it is? This is our punt returner, and if we use him every now and then in an offensive formation, that's fine.
Yeah, and that was my thinking, and I've sort of like, I haven't, when I've asked that question around the building, I haven't gotten the response of, oh, get out of here, he can handle it. Well, we'll see. Basically, what it means is Rashad Green, sort of their fallback option at punt return, is they know he's going to be on the roster, and if nobody else pans out, can they just sort of get by with him? At this point, you have to get more production out of that spot, so you can't put a guy back there. If Rashad earns the spot, then you put him back there. So, I guy like Brian Walters, we didn't see any of their new offseason because of a hamstring. Maybe he can make an impact. So It's I would be surprised if they enter week one with Rashad Greene as their only punt returner on the roster.
Have you seen – I know the reviews on Ace, at least through the offseason, were rave reviews with what he was doing in practice. What about Tannen Doss? I know you're not seeing a lot on special team stuff, but what about him in the offense?
He doesn't jump out at you. You're always going to notice Ace for good or bad because of his stature. And, you know, you notice Rashad Greene because he's a new guy. I mean, to me, if I'm Tannen Doss, I'm going in the preseason saying my only chance is to have a great punt return preseason because there isn't room at receiver in this offense when these guys are healthy.
Yeah, and look, 2 years ago he was dynamic at that kind of job, so we'll see if he has that same kind of form. Like you said, they need help in that spot. Special teams has been a point of focus for this team during this offseason, was to get better in the special teams, and have they found a punt returner? Did they find one a year ago and he just happened to get hurt, and it cost them a year of having somebody that was effective at that job? And look, Ace Sanders or Tannen Doss, if they're going to make this roster, it's going to be because they can return punts for this football team. And Ace, through 2 years, has not been anything for this football team in the punt return game. Tannen Doss, last time he was on an NFL field, was the best in the AFC at returning punts. So we'll see what it looks like really when we get to training camp and into the preseason. We'll take a look at the defensive side of that 53-man projection as we continue along today. Do still want to take your reflections and memories of the Cat. Curtis calling it a career after 19 years. Jackson DeVille's not going away, at least not reportedly. But Curtis will no longer be the man behind the mask. So share some of your favorite memories from the past 19 years, some of your personal interactions. 641-1010. Also, the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line at 641-1010. It is a Kenny Lay and Associates DivorceMenOnly.com Tuesday here on Jaguars Today. We'll roll along here on 1010 XL 92.5 FM.
We talked about this a few years ago and wondering how much longer it could go, and physically it's getting tougher and tougher, but I kind of felt obligated to stick around because I wanted to keep entertaining the fans on game days. I think now's a good time because the wins are going to come.
The man was always an optimist. It is a Tuesday edition of Jaguars Today. Kenny Lay and Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. Brings it to you every Tuesday. Mike Dempsey will be back with us on Thursday. We'll catch up with him, though, here in about 40 minutes or so. We'll try to catch up with him up there. He's in New York for some fantasy football convention. He actually called me this morning and
confirms that he was up.
Yeah, he was up. He was wandering around Times Square. He was like, I'm in front of the M&M's store.
I like that store.
I was like, cool, man. I was like, thanks for reminding me that you're in New York and I'm not. Here on a Tuesday, but we'll catch up with him as he's doing a fantasy football draft. They had it last night. I saw a particular Jaguar player that he took, and we'll let you know who that was a little bit later on today.
Okay, as, I saw that.
Mike up there for a fantasy football draft joining us from New York. Ryan O'Halloran in studio with me today, the fan feedback spotlight today, with Curtis Dvorak announcing he's retiring as the mascot of the Jacksonville Jaguars, no longer going to be donning the costume of Jackson DeVille. For 19 years he has been, though, and we want to know some of your favorite memories of the Cat on the field and off. So you can share those on Twitter at 1010XLFatTony, at Ryan O'Halloran, also at 1010XLTyler. You can call in with those memories as well, 641-1010, or on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line at 641-1010. We talked a lot about the offense. The offensive line, I think, is pretty easy to figure out for the Jaguars at this point in time. You have a pretty good feel for what that's going to look like, especially with, you know, Joco Parnell, Linder, and those two centers are probably going to be on this roster. You figure the two guys at guard with Zane Beatles and A.J. Khan, and Austin Pastor, because of his versatility, is probably going to be a guy that's here when everything is said and done. Maybe that ninth spot, I know you got him keeping nine, is one that could be up for debate when everything is said and done.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
But you need somebody that can play left tackle if Joco went down.
Yeah, and to me, that's Wells. Because he, you know, he was here last year. He's noticeably added bulk, and so he's your left tackle. I think the O-line stuff, I think, is pretty clear cut. You know, if everybody stays on the same path and stays healthy, because you get the five starters, you know, the backup center, whoever it's going to be, Bowenko, Wisniewski, and then Cann. So that's seven. I think Pastor moving him inside as to guard this month was a clear sign. Okay, we like you, but you have to do something else. And so he got rave reviews for doing that. So, okay, he's your swing guy.
Mm-hmm.
And then it gets up to Josh Wells to go ahead and win that backup left tackle job.
Yeah, I mean, we've been talking about it. If Luke Jokel goes down, I think that left tackle spot is the one you feel the worst about if somebody gets hurt right now, right? And that's saying a lot considering what we've seen from Luke Jokel.
Yeah.
It's a couple of years in the NFL that you feel like there's this massive drop-off if he happens to get hurt.
Yeah, and just because you haven't seen enough of Wells, if he's the guy, you know, if Pastor's called upon to play right tackle. I think the other spot that would be of big concern would be right guard. Because, you know, even though Austin's moved in there, he hasn't played there in a game in a while since, like, 2012 here. Mm-hmm. So, center, you got two guys. Left guard, you got two guys. Right tackle, Pastor's played it if called upon. So, you know, left tackle, obviously the money position. It's up to Luke to, you know, take a big step forward. And then also Linder probably enters the season as your most respected offensive lineman around the league.
Mm-hmm.
So you expect Linder to have another take another big step.
Shifting to the defensive side of the ball now, who is the beneficiary of the Dante Fowler Jr. injury?
Andre Branch. Because I think he sees his role will be increased. I think he might end up as the starter. I think Chris Clemons is a big winner. I had him on the bubble the night they drafted Fowler. In terms of a roster spot, I thought it'd be Chris Smith, but I left him off to keep an extra defensive tackle because of the Marks and Miller coming back from injuries. So beneficiaries in terms of playing time, Branch 1, Clemons 2.
And Branch going into a contract here, Clemons, this is probably the end of his time here in Jacksonville this season. And that's what we were talking about leading up to the draft, too, is when you look at that Leo position, the reason I was so focused on it for the draft was because you're talking about Branch being in a contract year, Clemons coming in, he's 33 years old or whatever
it is. And Branch not having done much.
Right. He hasn't shown you enough to feel like, all right, let's pay this guy and make him our Leo. Mm-hmm. He certainly hasn't shown you anything close to that. But Cindric Marks, obviously, Jared Odrick, Andre Branch, Roy Miller, and that's probably close to your starting. Chris Clemons will push for that starting spot at the Leo, obviously, as well. Ziggy Hood, who we heard some really good things from the coaches about with how he played in 2014. Tyson Alualu, who they re-signed this offseason. Ryan Davis. And Ryan is a guy who the conversation about him this entire offseason, and especially once Dante Fowler Jr. got hurt, was will he see an expanded role at that Leo, because he has been so effective for them inside on those third down rush plays. Will they give him an opportunity to be on the field more?
Well, I think by default he will. It's interesting with Davis. I think on third downs, he almost helps you more interior-wise. Where he can probably get on the field more now is early downs. If they give Branch a blow or Clemons a break, you know, if they make Ryan Davis a part of that early down Leo rotation, because you figure Alualu is going to spell Odrick at the big end spot. So, the pass rush thing is Bears watching, because they don't have a guy right now that teams say we got to account for.
Right.
I think they're going to be hard pressed to meet that sack total. I think they're banking on the fact that their coverage is going to be better, and they'll be able to get some sacks that way.
Avery Jones and Michael Bennett. So you got him keeping 10 on the defensive line. Was Chris Smith kind of that first guy out?
He was the first guy out. And, you know, he's practice squad eligible because they can, you know, he didn't play. He only played 7 games last year. You know, he bounced up and down last year. You know, if Ryan Davis was just a Leo, then I'd give Chris Smith the edge. But Ryan's added another thing to his game that Chris Smith can't do. And when you get down to that bottom part of the roster, you're looking for versatility, and Ryan Davis checks that box.
At the linebacker position, we know who the 3 starters are going to be.
That's where it gets interesting.
Yeah, it gets a little more difficult after that. But Telvin Smith, Paul Puzlesny, Dan Scuda. You have Leroy Reynolds, and I guess he can back up 2 of those spots. He can play middle and that auto if they need him to. And Thurston Armbrister, who's a guy they've been talking about throughout this offseason.
Yeah, I sort of like drank the Kool-Aid on him. I made him my 5th guy because he plays special teams in college. The only issue is with the five I have, they don't have a true backup Will. That would, if they keep six, that would help Jeremiah Georgia's stock. But I went back and forth on that one. The reason I kept five linebackers is I have them keeping a fifth safety because you don't know what Sample's going to be able to do week one.
Okay, and well, let's go to the safety position then. We know Cyprian Brown, Sample. You got him still keeping Evans, who the guys in the building like. Mm-hmm. They really like Josh Evans. And Craig Loston, you have them keeping as that fifth safety.
And Loston's probably my 53rd man. Because if Sample comes back from the broken arm and plays in a preseason game at least one and shows that he's healthy and is up to speed, I could see them going four safeties and then six linebackers.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, and if Loston could be a guy that makes the 53, but doesn't really make it, maybe doesn't make it to week three. So
yeah, the cornerback position, we know the four. Right, Devon House, Aaron Colvin, Demetrius McCray, Dwayne Grotz, who's apparently been pretty good in this offseason, has responded.
Mm-hmm. That's the key word.
Yeah, has responded to what happened last year. Bubblegum, he's picking it up this offseason. But the fifth guy you got him keeping was a guy that I was actually surprised they kept around last year based on what we saw in the preseason with this guy. The memory I still have of him is that week four of the preseason where he's getting just torched by the Atlanta Falcons, and that's Jeremy Harris, but you have him still as part of the 53.
I had him off on my rough drafts throughout the offseason until both was mentioned by Dwayne Walker and Gus Bradley. I think it's going to be either Harris or Rashad Reynolds. You know, Reynolds, we just simply haven't seen play. Hurt all last year with the broken hand. So Harris hasn't been impressive in games, the little he's played, but I mean, that's going to be one of those that could go right down to the last cut.
Yeah, and I know it was with Bradley, was it last week, that he mentioned Harris specifically and said he's getting the idea of how much he needs to help on special teams. Like, that's finally sinking in for him as a player going now into his third year.
Which, what an indictment on the player.
Right.
But yeah, it's, you know, during these off-season things, there's no pads, but there's not even so much. There's very little special teams outside of a walkthrough. The only chance to really for coaches and players to find out about special teams is in the games. Because when the fans are out here for padded practices in August, you're not going to see gunners. You're not going to see wedge breakers, that kind of thing, or returns. You're going to see guys kicking. So four games tells everything on that.
So you think the flexibility comes at linebacker and safety?
Yeah, I think they're committed to 10 D linemen. I think it's either going to be a sixth linebacker or a fifth safety, because 25, 25, and then three offense, defense, special teams. So that leaves 15 spots for linebackers and secondary. I think that's where we're going to pan out.
Yeah, and not the last time, obviously, that we'll have you in here to talk about this. So we'll talk about some of the specific position battles that we'll be getting ready for when we're getting ready for training camp. And that doesn't just include, like, who's going to be the starting left guard, right? Which right now everybody kind of feels like it's going to be Zane Beatles. But those position battles at the bottom end of the roster, these guys, and what they have to do and show in camp and into the preseason, we'll get into that throughout the course of the offseason.
And there's going to be a handful of surprises. And what you're always looking for in camp is there going to be a situation like last year where a guy like Mike Brewster goes from starter to cut? I don't think so, but there's always something wacky that happens.
Sure. The center position last year in camp was chaos. It was chaos. They had three guys who couldn't play the position.
One was hurt.
Right, and they finally went to the rookie and said, we might have something here with Luke Boyko. So we'll see how it works out once we get to camp. But you're right. There generally does tend to be one position that turns into kind of that quagmire when everything is said and done, whether it be because of injuries or because of the options that you're left with at that particular position. We got this date in football history, the Honda Drive around the NFL coming up. We also want to take your phone calls as well. 641-1010. The Cat, Curtis Dvorak, he's hanging it up after 19 years and no longer going to be donning the costume of one Jackson DeVille. Share with us some of your favorite memories as we roll along here on a Kenny Lay and Associates DivorceMenOnly.com Tuesday on Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history presented this today by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. There's not a whole lot, man. It's June 23rd. There's not a ton, but I found this little nugget. Born on June 23rd, 1975, and Jaguar fans will be very happy that he was 1 yard short in the Super Bowl against the St. Louis Rams.
Kevin Dyson.
Kevin Dyson turning 40 years old today, 1 yard away from a Super Bowl championship with the Tennessee Titans. And is there anything more heartbreaking than losing it from 1 yard away? Well, maybe Seattle last year. If they didn't have the one to fall on from the year before, last year may have been a little bit worse. But today, Kevin Dyson turning 40 years old, 1 yard short in that Super Bowl against the St. Louis Rams. This date in football history presented by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry, located on Gate Parkway. If you need cosmetic work done, or if you are just in the market for a family dentist, call Dr. McCall's office at 904-620-9225. That is this date in football history.
Now, the Honda Drive around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
Well, UCLA police arrested music mogul Sean P. Diddy Combs, whose son is a football player on the Bruins, on charges of 3 counts of assault with a deadly weapon, as well as 1 count of making terrorist threats and 1 count of battery on Monday. According to FoxSports.com, the alleged victim was one of his son's coaches and UCLA strength coach Sal Alossi. You may remember Alossi as a former New York Jets strength and conditioning coach who was suspended back in 2010 for tripping Miami Dolphins cornerback Nolan Carroll. So there's a little NFL connection for you guys. Terrell Pryor was recently cut by the Bengals and did not sit around too long. He was claimed off waivers by the Browns yesterday. An interesting note from Albert Breer of the NFL Network. He reports the Browns plan to use Pryor at wide receiver. And finally, free agent running back and former Indianapolis Colt Ahmad Bradshaw is facing a 1-game suspension for violating the league's substance abuse policy. He pleaded not guilty to marijuana possession back in February, and he's recovering from a fractured fibula, so his free agent stock not looking too good, guys.
You know, this whole Diddy thing, right? Okay, first of all, dads at college practices bugs me. They shouldn't be out there in the first place. Second, really, if there's any coach on any coaching staff that you don't want to pick a fight with, wouldn't you think it would be the strength coach? Like, yeah. That guy, as I heard Bomani Jones put it last night on the radio, he said, that guy's entire job is to get you mad enough that you want to fight him, but you can't beat him up, so you take it out on the weights. That's his entire job. That's the guy P. Diddy's going to pick a fight with?
Yeah, and it's the guy, as Tyler pointed out, who is not immune to doing dirty tactics.
No.
Like tripping players. So no. I didn't even know the son was playing. You said, I know Snoop's kid is headed there this coming season, but
some think that may be part of it. By the way, P. Diddy's kid Justin, I believe his name is, plays defensive back for UCLA. He hasn't been on the field much. I think he's going into his junior or senior year. He's only played in like 7 games or 10 games or something like that during that time. So he wasn't a highly recruited kid. He was like a 2-star prospect or something like that coming out of high school. Snoop's kid is apparently a baller, mm-hmm. right? And maybe P. Diddy's feeling the pressure. You know, Snoop's kid's coming. It's time for mine to get a shot.
What do you guys think the terrorist threat charge is coming from? How do you get that? I don't understand.
I would have burned down your house, MF-er.
That's
there
right.
There you go. That's a good point.
That's
just a guess. That's not that I've ever done that.
While holding the kettlebell.
But just it's fascinating to go, how can you go from probably obviously standing on the sidelines to finding an available kettleball to wielding it at him. You know,
right.
It'd be great. You know, at what point did people realize this is escalating? This is getting out of hand.
Right. Well, the whole thing apparently was after practice, and he wanted to talk to the guy in the office because of whatever abuses he was hurling at his kid during a workout. So, look, why was Diddy there? Why was Sean Combs at the practice, UCLA?
Maybe Jim Mora Jr. has like an open door policy.
Apparently, the backstory was that his son was kicked out of a workout for being kind of lazy. He gave a lackluster effort, so the coach sent him home. And it sounded like P. Diddy came to the offices to confront him, be like, "Yo, why are you kicking my son out of practice?" But
it's even worse.
He's got every right to kick him out of practice if he's not trying hard, right?
Yeah, it's even worse. I mean, unless he actually said something that really was over the line to that kid within Diddy's hearing, which he shouldn't be within Diddy's hearing, but unless he actually said something that was over the line, this whole thing is so stupid. Now, in the end, I don't think anything's going to come of it because Sean Combs is nearly a billionaire. These kind of guys usually don't find too much trouble when they get in these kind of situations because of the lawyers that they can afford to appoint for themselves to handle these situations. So in the end, I don't think anything's going to come of this thing except that he embarrassed the heck out of his kid who wasn't playing already with his football team. He's got a better chance today, Dad, of showing up on that campus, and now he's going to have everybody's respect on that football team.
Well, I think what happens next is such and such has decided to transfer.
Yeah, I don't know I don't know if you can go back on that campus.
Yeah,
if you're that kid. But if you're lazy enough that you're getting thrown out of workouts, maybe you want your dad showing up at the office and threatening to fight the strength coach. Let's get out to the phone line, 641-1010. You can also weigh in via the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line at 641-1010. Let's get Bud up first. He had a question about the 53-man roster. What's up, Bud?
Hello, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, Bud.
Hello. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah.
In August, I'm starting my fourth quarter of life, and I'm hoping to come back in about a month or so with some good things to report about the Jaguars. I have three positions that I'm looking at in final cuts. I honestly believe that they need to add a proven wide receiver and be looking for a linebacker and possible a D-back safety or something. I want to know about what you think the Jaguars might do in that scenario, and I'll listen. Thank you.
Appreciate
Thanks.
The call,
I agree on linebacker. I think that's the one spot depth-wise where you could see something done after the cuts when they scour the waiver wire of the 600 players. Receiver, I think that ship has probably left.
Sure. I mean, you take a couple shots at veterans in free agency, right?
Yeah.
And the odds of guys that are better than Jennings or that type of guy hitting free agency, I mean, mm-hmm. what's going to be left?
Yeah, and I agree with the caller in the sense that who's obviously thinks they need a veteran presence. They thought so, too, when they made a run at Cobb and also Jennings. But they've sort of now, okay, we tried, but you know, let's not just bring anybody in for bringing them in. And then defensive back, I mean, the problem is they're just – as the Sergio Brown signing showed, not a lot of safeties out there in free agency in March, so the Jaguars moved on Sergio pretty quickly. I think they're okay at corner because they added that veteran presence in-house. So if I had to rank your needs there, linebacker would be far and away number one.
Me too. And I think it may even be likely that when teams start cutting it down to 75 and 53 during the next couple months, that you may see the Jaguars taking a hard look at what they're doing with the linebacker position on this roster because it is so razor thin, it feels like right now. If you're talking about a guy like Armbrister, and he may be a good player. I mean, it's not that undrafted guys haven't ever come in this league and turned out to be good players, but they feel like they're so thin at that linebacker spot right
because,
now.
Because, like, there's just I mean, our impression of that group lowers because there's no track record.
Right.
That's, maybe two of these guys, maybe one of these guys emerges, but it's going to be like there's always one position each camp or each early in the season that is constantly in a churn, and I think maybe reserve linebacker could be that position this year.
Certainly could be. Let's get back out to the phone lines. Welcome John in. What's going on, John?
Morning, guys. Ryan, good job on the 53-man. With
Thanks.
Curtis, I think we look past and we only look at what he does on Sundays. You forget that he's out there in elementary schools. He's out there at parties for kids, all of these things. And a lot of these kids that are 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, they're not Jaguar fans yet. They may not be football fans yet. But all of a sudden, this crazy cat comes in there, and the kids become, that's their first connection to the Jaguars. Curtis has done a fabulous job of that. And I certainly hope that the only reason that Curtis is leaving is because Curtis wanted to leave. It would take back a lot of the goodwill that this franchise has started ever since Shot's been here if all of a sudden you did take away one of the most popular people in the organization because of one foul prank that y'all talked about. Bad prank, but hey, it happened.
All right, John, appreciate the call, buddy. And look, I tend to agree with you. I hope that this isn't because of what happened. It's the Pittsburgh Steelers this year.
Or you hope that it's not because of anything.
Yeah. I mean, look, the guy's been doing it for 19 years. He may just have decided I need to be doing something else. And you're right. He has been great. And honestly,
I'm glad he called in, because since I have been here is I have been to a lot of those events, like in different parts of town, where it's a player appearance, and I want to go talk to the player, and I'm up talking to Curtis for 5-10 minutes. Whoever the player is, as soon as he walks out, the kids don't care.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where his greatest contribution is to an ambassador. And it's the stuff that caller said. It's the stuff on non-Sundays that's going to be toughest to fill.
Yeah, because he's been so good at that. And I've already had, you know, multiple people today, you know, reacting to the fan feedback question, what's your favorite memory of Jackson DeVille, that are saying it has nothing to do with anything he did on field, and they'll talk about those experiences. Their kid, he shows up at an elementary school, and he's like, my kid didn't like football, doesn't care about football, but he likes the Jaguars because he likes Curtis. Like, you know, I mean, it's that kind of thing, and that's what he's brought to this organization. There is this off-field swell, and you're watching a bunch of guys who grew up in this city watching this Jacksonville Jaguars team that, look, let's be honest, guys. The last 10 years have been dark. I mean, it's 2007. They went to the playoffs to beat the Pittsburgh Steelers. They go and they lose to the undefeated New England Patriots. What have you had since? I mean, what have you had since as far as what there is to be excited about when you show up for a game day? They drafted a franchise quarterback that turned out to be as big a dud as he could possibly be in Blaine Gabbert. There's been not a whole lot to be excited about. You saw the NFL's leading rusher for a year. You got that in Maurice Jones-Drew, but that's really been the highlight of the last 8 years of Jaguars football. But every week in that stadium, the cat delivered. I mean, he absolutely delivered. And I know for me, one of my favorite things the cat ever did was during that 2012 season when they're going 2-14 or whatever it was, when the cat is doing the week-by-week bets with the opposing team mascots that the Jags are going to win, just heads up against these guys, and it's always a paintball gun bet, right? So they keep losing, and we keep getting videos of the cat being shot up by paintballs because he refuses to not believe in what this Jacksonville Jaguars team can accomplish, and that's kind of been the guy he's been. He took those paintballs for you, Jacksonville, for your entertainment, and look, nobody's ever done it better that I've ever seen than what the cat has done for the past 19 years here in Jacksonville. He's been unbelievable as a mascot for a team. So celebrate him today as part of the fan feedback spotlight. Let us know some of your favorite memories of Curtis wearing that Jackson DeVille costume. DeVille's not going away, guys. DeVille's not going away. It's just the guy who's made it as special a character as it's been for nearly the past 20 years is stepping aside. We'll catch up with Mike Dempsey. We'll get his thoughts on Curtis's retirement, as well as what's going on up there in New York as we head up to the Big Apple here in just a moment. Mike Dempsey joins us on the program on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Oh, yeah. Tuesdays here on Jaguars Today, brought to you by Kenny Lay and Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. I'm Fat Tony, Ryan O'Halloran from the Times Union alongside right now. Let's go up to beautiful old New York, New York, and welcome in Mike Dempsey. What's up, Demps?
Oh, yeah. In the city that never sleeps, baby. Here's what quintessential New York was yesterday, Tony. I walked by the Foot Locker in Times Square, and for some reason there's a line of like 20-something people waiting to get in Foot Locker, of all places.
Did you just step in line?
I did not, but there's a lady walking by. She just looks at the line, shakes her head. She goes, "What? Michael Vick must be in there." Of all people that you think would draw the crowd in the Foot Locker, it was Michael Vick. Michael Vick must be in there. Come on with this line. I mean, it was beautiful. The New York accent is music to my ears. I know it's grating to a lot of people, but I love it here.
I guess she's still caught up on the 2014 Jets roster. Sorry, lady.
I don't know.
She's not. Mike Vick's not here anymore with the New York Jets. You know what the big news today is, Mike. It's the retirement of Curtis and stepping out of that costume after 19 years.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about this a little earlier, that as much as Shad Khan and company, Mark Lamping and everybody, have put into the game day experience. You think back over the years, and some bad Jaguar teams over the years, I mean, some really good ones as well, but the one thing you knew about the game day experience was you had him. You had the best mascot in sports, and he was always entertaining and always coming up with new routines, more and more outrageous, dangerous kind of stuff. Whether it was bungee jumping or, accidentally lighting himself on fire. he's been fantastic. And all you have to do is look at the fan reaction to it. I started getting questions a couple days ago because the rumors started getting out that this is headed that way. And, people were all, disappointed, shocked. And, they love the guy. And rightfully so. He's been fantastic. And congrats to Curtis and Jackson to Bill for a great run.
No, it's been awesome. And I don't know if you've ever heard the story, Ryan, about 96. Morton Anderson missed that field goal to allow the Jags to get into the playoffs. I'm sure you've heard that story since you got to Jacksonville. But
all the time as we entered the studio on the old clips.
That's right. But Curtis, as Jacksonville, that was his first year in the costume, was 96. Wasn't around for 95. And he was over by the goalpost, like banging his head against the goalpost because he was like, Morton Anderson's going to make this field goal and we're going to miss the playoffs because of this. So he's banging his head on the goalpost before the kick is attempted, and it's shaking the entire goalpost. So the official comes up to him and says, "Hey, stop that. You're shaking the goalpost." So then Morton Anderson attempts the kick. It's still wobbling up at the top, and it goes wide, and he was waiting for the official to throw the flag and a penalty and allow Morton Anderson to retry it because the mascot, who was going to lose his job after 1 year, had interfered with the play by banging his head on the pole. It's one of my favorite Curtis stories that he's ever told. That one and the time he almost died diving into the stadium are probably my two favorite, Mike. But, yeah, I mean, it's been 19 years, and for the past 8 or 9, there hasn't been really anything else to watch when you come to game days with the Jacksonville Jaguars, at least nothing better than the Cat here in the stadium.
Now, you think about it, go back to 96, had that really been called? I mean, that's all people would be talking about because Morton Anderson wouldn't have missed again. He would have made the field goal. The Jags never would have gone to the playoffs. And, everybody would have been talking about the greatest mistake in the history of the franchise. And who knows? You wouldn't have had that thrilling postseason. I mean, it came that close, at least in his mind. Maybe it was never a serious consideration, but I know he thinks it was a serious consideration, Tony and Ryan, that he was really worried. He was in his head, he was already like, man, I'm just not going to show up anymore. I'm just not going to come back and not even bother because there's no point in how bad they're going to fire me at this point. So fortunately, it didn't happen.
It would have been one of the all-time stories that a mascot cost the team an opportunity to go to the playoffs. It would have been.
I like the way it turned out better.
I do too, but it would have been something that, in NFL lore, they'd be talking about that still.
Oh, my
Jacksonville,
goodness.
Not only would they still be the punchline for all the national media, but remember, this is the team that had the mascot cost them a playoff appearance. I mean, that's that as the punchline to that joke would be something else, and fortunately we don't have to deal with that. What do you have going on up in New York? I know you've been saying for a while it's some kind of fantasy football thing. What exactly are you doing up there, Mike?
It's the Fantasy Sports Trade Association Summer Conference, which is basically, kind of what you'd expect it to be. All the guys who work in the fantasy football industry, from Matthew Berry at ESPN to me and everything in between, in one form or fashion, get together for couple days of conferences and just what's new in the industry. There are, pitches from different companies and just like any other trade group getting together. But we have the draft that kind of tips off the summer as far as it goes last night. And Bob Harris, who I work with on Sirius, typically attends and represents in the draft. And he had magazine deadlines, so they sent me in his place. So I got the draft last night. I had the first pick. Thought I killed it, by the way, and so it was a lot of fun. We had a big time at the Crown Plaza Hotel, and another day of similar activities, although no more drafting duties for me at this point.
No.
So you took two Jaguars last night, right?
I did take two Jaguars last night. I took T.J. Yeldon at the first pick of the fourth round. It's a 14-team league, which would make him, in a typical 12-team league, like a mid-fourth rounder, which is about where he's going right now. And then I got Julius Thomas with the last pick of round 8, which, again, in a 12-team league, that's the middle of round 10. So, I mean, he's fallen off so far in people's minds, but I think his numbers will come down somewhat. But, Ryan, last year he was going in the middle of the second round. So this is, you know, kind of 8-9 rounds of value that you're getting on the guy this year. He's the 12th tight end off the board. I mean, I wasn't planning on pairing them up, and it just worked out that way. But I felt like at the time they were both the best value, so I was happy to have them.
Yeah, and it feels like Julius Thomas is probably going to be somewhere in the middle of that when everything is said and done, right? Like, I don't think he's the 12th tight end in fantasy football this year.
If he's the 6th tight end, he's a value now.
Right. I mean, and that's about what I would expect him to be. 6 to 8 would be what I expect him to. There's not a whole lot of great offensive tight ends in the National Football League. Do you recall where Allen Robinson went?
Oh, I'd say round 6, maybe, something like that, round 6. I mean, there's definitely some buzz about Allen Robinson. He's the guy that everybody's asking me about, even more than T.J. Yeldon. They want to know because, I mean, you know, when you get a running back who comes in, and we've already heard the stories about how many touches you can expect to get, people are aware of that. But I think, you know, the buzz around Allen Robinson continues to grow because in a nice off season, despite not being available for all of OTAs, to have Gus Bradley single him out as one of the guys that stood out to him, I thought was a good feather in his cap. And if he can stay healthy, you know, and the guy was on pace for 77 catches last year. No reason to think he can't catch 80, 85 balls this year if he stays healthy. And, you know, at that point in a draft, you're looking for guys that are going to start accumulating a lot of receptions. The touchdowns are a little bit more difficult to project, but you know, I think I would say he probably went off as a low-end wide receiver 2, more likely kind of a middle wide receiver 3 without looking at the numbers right in front of me right now.
Who went in the first round last night where you said, that guy doesn't know what he's doing?
Nobody in the first round, but, you know, there's a room full of people that really should know what they're doing.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you, this is what, you know, Tony will tell you, Ryan, I don't know how much you've played fantasy football, but when you see guys come off the board early that you had no interest in drafting, you're just inside, you're just pumping your fist like, yeah,
baby.
And so I had the first pick in the draft. I took Adrian Peterson. So I knew I'd have the 28th and 29th picks back-to-back. And I'm calculating how many guys I really would like at that spot. I had about 25. So I needed a few oddball picks to happen. Somebody took Carlos Hyde in the middle of round 2, which I don't think it's that crazy, but that one was quickly forgotten when the very next pick was Darren McFadden.
And, whoa! You know, second round?
In the middle of the second round, everyone was stunned. There was a simultaneous draft going on at the same time in another room, and he went in about the 7th or 8th round, which is makes more sense. You know,
is Jerry Jones a part of this league?
Look, right. Even if I told you Darren McFadden was going to get 250 carries behind that offensive line, which there's no guarantee that he will, and we know there's no guarantee the guy will stay healthy for more than a week. That's about the upside for him. That's about the best you could expect would be mid-second round value out of that guy. And you're making a mistake if you're drafting a guy needing every condition to come through perfectly for your pick to pay off as a good value. And there were actually a couple of owners in the draft that were talking about him before the draft. And I don't know if one of them psyched the other one into thinking he was taking him early, but he swears he was, and he was actually sitting next to me. He was upset when McFadden went in the middle of the second round, but the rest of us were like, that is just pretty far out in left field.
Thank you. Yeah.
Hey, Mike. Yeah. I get this question a lot when I'm at league events, and so I'll throw it to you in the same kind of setting. Are people asking about the Jags?
About the team as a whole?
Yeah. Yeah.
No. In this environment, all they want to know about is who's going to put up numbers. You know, offensively. I still think there's a great feeling that people aren't really paying attention. People are saying, "Wow." You know, T.J. Yeldon, Jag can't run the ball. Well, wait a minute. Let's stop and look at what they've done with the offensive line. Let's talk about their commitment to the running game. And let's, you know, so I think it's there's still a case, Ryan, of out of sight, out of mind. You know, they're for the people that are really savvy, they may know what's going on. But I was talking to some people last night just about what they've done, speaking of the game day experience and how ready Jacksonville is to explode as a football town when the product on the field catches up. And they were shocked. They had no idea. I mean, even to the point of, you know, the video boards and the pools and all that. It was just like it barely registered in their mind. And I'm like, yeah, they were both the best game day experience in the National Football League. And they just didn't know what to say. They had no idea. So I think there's still a lot of ignorance, blissful or otherwise, when it comes to this franchise.
Before we let you go, Mike, had the opportunity to hang out with the BCB St. Augustine chapter on Saturday night. I talked about it a little bit yesterday, but you were out there hanging out too. It was a really good time hanging out with the boys.
They're good people, man. I mean, we've enjoyed it. They support the Jags like crazy. Why shouldn't we support them? Is the way I look at it. I mean, when we talked about Tony for years about that generation of fans who've known nothing but Jaguar fandom comes of age, what will that mean for this franchise? Well, a lot of these people are that. Okay, they're not all of them. Some are a little bit older, but there are a lot of 20-somethings who've known nothing but the Jacksonville Jaguars as their family, their parents' favorite team, their own favorite team growing up, and they've grown up as Jaguar fans. And this is the first generation, and a lot of them are represented by not only Bold City Brigade, but Peel Street Hooligans. And, you know, even if you're not in the club, if you're in that group, you are the future of the Jacksonville Jaguar fan base. So I think it's our duty to support those guys in as much as everything they do. I think they're fantastic. They go above and beyond. I talked to somebody last night who was at the draft with me in Chicago, and they didn't mention how impressed they were with the Jaguar fans there, because the Bold City Brigade were the ones. They were representing the Teal Street Hooligans. They're both there. And so, you know, had a great time, but didn't expect anything less because they're good people.
Who picked you up?
Actually, took a cab there, Ryan. Thank you for asking, because no one would come pick me up. And this almighty Uber told me there are no cars available in St. Augustine, apparently. So I took a cab, but I did get a ride home. So I will not speak for who drove me home, because I don't want to suggest that they were 100% sober. But I was not driving, and that was my goal going into the evening, and mission accomplished. Everyone got home safely.
I had no intention of driving any car at any
point.
That's why I rode with somebody there.
Yeah, me too.
That's why you didn't drive. Yeah.
Me too.
Was there a rumor that Tyler Devitt was on top of the bar?
On top of the bar? I thought under the table, maybe, at one point. But I
give Dempsey a softball, he swings.
I think you're getting confused with Lauren Brooks, who was dancing on the bar at one point.
See, that I believe.
Oh, and Ozier. Ozier was up there, too, now.
Ozier's mad at people.
So it was good. Johnny O and his beautiful bride were on hand, so it was nice to see them out and about. It was kind of a stealth appearance by him, Tony, didn't you think? I was like, well, Ozone's here. You know, we talked about it for a week and a half, never heard a peep out of him, so
no.
I don't know if he's trying to be sneaky by coming like that. I don't know.
I don't know about sneaky. I think he heard that you and I were going to be there and said maybe it is an event that he should attend.
Oh, that could have been it. Maybe it did rise to his level after all. So.
Yeah.
But he made the night. Certainly him showing up, I think, made the night in most people's eyes.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun out there on Saturday night. All right, Mike, enjoy the next day and a half. You got up there in New York, and we'll see you again on Thursday, bud.
All right, guys. Take care.
See you, Mike.
That's Mike Dempsey. He's up in New York for a fantasy football draft that went on last night. I think they're doing some more stuff today with some fantasy football talk. But no more drafting. He said he got Adrian Peterson with the first overall pick and a couple Jaguars. That's at least two teams I know he's drafted in the last 2 weeks, where he wound up with Yeldon and Julius Thomas just because he likes the value. We do this every year because we live here in Jacksonville and we're really close to it. We fall in love with a couple Jaguars prospects that everyone else is like, why are you taking them where you're taking them in drafts?
Well, I always like, I'll probably play in one fantasy league this year, and I'll take a couple just to keep me interested.
Right.
But you guys are a lot hardcore. But
we play too much.
Who, if you would have had the first pick last night, who are you taking?
Probably Peterson.
Right.
Even
after the year layoff?
Yeah, if you found out that Le'Veon Bell was going to get the suspension reduced, like, Bell would be the number one overall pick if he didn't have the suspension hanging over his head. He would be the number one overall pick, and I don't think there would be much debate about it, but he still hadn't had his appeal hearing set, so you don't know what's going on, and this is the game you play when you're drafting fantasy football teams ridiculously in June. But apparently it's when you're on or you're among people who want to draft in June, it gets you 3 days in New York if nothing else, if you're Mike Dempsey. Like I said, he'll be back with us on Thursday. We'll get to the fan feedback spotlight, some of y'all's responses. If you want to get in on that, you still can. We're asking fans today, with Curtis retiring as Jackson DeVille. DeVille's not going away, but Curtis isn't going to be wearing the costume anymore. After 19 years, what are some of your favorite memories of the Cat in the costume? We'll get some of your answers at 1010XL Fat Tony, at Ryan O'Halloran, at 1010XL Tyler, also on the Facebook page, facebook.com/Jaguars Today. We'll get to the fan feedback spotlight, talking a little bit more about the Cat as we roll along here on a Kenny Lay and Associates Divorce Men Only.com Law Tuesday here on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Thanks again to Demps for joining us for a few minutes and waking up up there in New York. Rolling over in the hotel room after.
He sounded a lot better than the morning we talked to him when he was in Chicago for the draft.
Yes. There's no doubt. Mike enjoys it when he gets to be out there on the road, as I experience it every year with him when we head out to the Super Bowl. We'll be doing that again early next year at Super Bowl 50 coming up in the Bay Area. We're looking forward to getting out there. I've never been out to California, so I'm really looking forward to seeing some of the sights out there in California. But thanks again to Demps for coming on. We'll get to the fan feedback spotlight here in just a couple of moments with what are some of your favorite memories of Jackson DeVille as Curtis is hanging up the outfit after 19 years. We'll get to some of your responses to that here in just a couple of moments, but right now let's get back out to the phone line. 641-1010. Isaiah has dialed us up. He wants to ask a question about the 53-man roster we went over. It's on Jacksonville.com right now. What's up, Isaiah?
Hey, guys. I was wanting to know, is there any chance Sergio Brown or Clay Harbor may not make the team? I know they drafted Sample, but I don't know about...
I think Sergio Brown definitely on the team because I think he's your week one starter. Even if Sample had not been injured, I still think Sergio would have been able the opening game starter. As for Clay Harbor, I have a feeling that if they already thought he was out of their plans, they would have made that move already. Mm-hmm. But I think they see him as a viable backup behind Julius Thomas at that move tight end spot. But if Clay's got to be out there. He messed up most of these OTAs with a calf injury. If he gets hurt again, then I think that would put him on the bubble.
Yeah, I mean, that's a guy that has flashed in some opportunities that he had. I know last training camp he was a star at camp before he had that injury with the practice over at Bartram Trail.
Yeah, and he was clicking with Blake Bortles until he just disappeared from the rotation mysteriously. For the last 5-6 games, I know Mercedes was back, but his playing time was cut to almost nothing.
Let's squeeze one more call in at 641-1010. Scott wants to talk about the Cat. What's up, Scott?
Hey, guys. Yeah, just real quick, 2 years ago, we were at the Clay County Fair, and my 5-year-old daughter, who was already kind of nervous about going on the giant slide by herself, Jackson DeVille rolls up on a little mini scooter, runs all the way up to the top of the slide, and then proceeds to surf down standing up with my daughter sitting next to him.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah, and she's been a fan of Jackson DeVille ever since.
Why wouldn't she be, man?
She had no idea who he was until he ran up, and then from then on, anytime she sees him on TV or I show her pictures on Twitter and stuff, she just loves him.
We appreciate the call, and look, I've heard a lot of those stories over the years with Curtis, and it's what we were talking about, is he's been a great ambassador for this team. And, by the way, his on-field antics, some of the stuff he's done, how many mascots have gotten rules changed? You know, because Curtis has. Like, some of the things he's done has forced the NFL's hand to change the rules when it comes to mascots and the way that they interact with things going on and around the field. Let's get to the fan feedback spotlight. It is brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships. We ask you every day, what drives you, Jaguars fans? Today in the Tom Bush fan feedback spotlight, we ask, what are some of your favorite memories of the Cat in the last 19 years? Here's what we got from Duval Doom. Had to be the time when he came out in the cage after Polian complained and got the rules changed, which was an awesome, awesome moment from Alex. I actually retweeted this one. It's a personal one for me. The time Jacksonville iced me for the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge. I retweeted that video, so you can check it out in my timeline if you'd like to. Cristiano tailgating with the Bold City Brigade. From Kevin, seeing my son's face light up when he saw Jackson and giving him a hug and kiss are my favorite. Memories from Eric, when he pulled off a backflip on a bike during a halftime, totally nailed it and had never seen it before. Hashtag GOAT. That would be greatest of all time. From Irish Jag, rushing onto the field to celebrate the Hail Mary Garrard to Thomas touchdown versus Houston in 2010. That was a great moment. From Allison, the moment Bill Cowher and the Steelers labeled him Jackson DeVillain, the most hated Jaguar. Gonna miss that cat. He actually got interviewed by the media up in Pittsburgh because of some of the antics during a Steelers game where Bill Cowher was actually commenting on the Jaguars mascot getting ready for a game because of the things that Jackson would do. He would actually yell at players in huddles while they were on the field for the Pittsburgh Steelers. He would be on the field screaming at players in the huddle. From Black Dog, favorite memory when he shook the goalpost and caused Morton Anderson to shank the Falcons game-winning kick. From Richard, my favorite DeVille memory was being included in focus groups to select the mascot in 1995. He was 10 at the time. That's kind of cool. From Hardy Bros, there's too many, but every time he caught a kickoff and tried to return it, was great. Look, the cat's been great. For 19 years, Curtis in that costume has been great. We'll see where the mascot goes from here. I've seen some pretty good ideas. I'm not necessarily a proponent of putting the mascot into your pride. But I think, look, he wears the double zero. I think it'd be kind of cool if the next guy to wear the costume, you put the 01 on. So it's more like the next iteration of Jackson DeVille, right? I think that's kind of a cool idea, and I do like the idea of you rename the light tower that he jumped off of for all these home games to the Dvorak Tower. Like, that's his spot, right? And I'm not saying that the next guy needs to be able to do the same thing that Curtis did for game days, because there's no other mascot that's doing what Curtis did on game days. And it's not only the impact that he had, obviously, entertaining people on the field. We saw him during the Miami game just last year, Ryan, chasing that pigeon around.
That was last year
against Miami. So, okay. Look, he's an entertaining guy. He's always been fun to talk to, in and out of the costume. So, look, we'll miss Curtis as the cat. And hopefully the football team gives you reasons to forget Curtis as the cat sometime in the very near future. Your mascot retiring shouldn't be nearly as sad as it is today for fans, guys. But it's a reflection in some ways of where the organization has been in recent years as well. But that doesn't make what he's done any less cool or special as a part of the game day experience here in Jacksonville. He's definitely made it better since he donned the costume. So congratulations on a great career in the costume, Curtis. You know we love you here on Jaguars Today. And I seriously doubt the conversation about the impact of the cat for this fan base and this team is done here on 1010XL today. Ryan, I know you're heading off on vacation. What can we look forward to here in the next couple days on Jacksonville.com?
On Sunday, I'll have an insider, and I did some doing some research on these new players, these free agents they signed. How much more are they going to play this year? I mean, what are they used to playing? That kind of thing. And then also Sunday, I'm starting a little thing that I'm going to do, a team by team look, summer, like sort of a summer review. I'm going to say, okay, where's everybody at the quarterback position in this league? Divide into categories, and I'll do number one receiver after that, first round draft pick expectations, etc. So we'll be supplementing some stuff, but also taking some time off.
Yep, it's about 5 weeks. I know you're heading off on the vacation today, so enjoy the time up north, buddy. And,
right.
We'll see you, if not next week, the week after, and continue this off-season journey here with the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Let's do it.
All right, that's Ryan O'Halloran from the Times Union. Mike Dempsey will be back with us on Thursday. J.P. Shadrick and John Osier will join me for Jaguars Today tomorrow. I'll be back on tonight on 1010XL following the ladies of Helmets and Heels from 8 to 10. As look, I don't know what kind of shape I'm going to be in by the time we get in for the show tonight. I'm going to be... Last night, Country had to deal with me being distracted starting at 8 o'clock because Vandy's playing for a national title in baseball, guys. Back-to-back national titles. And tonight, I got no one to keep me focused once 8 o'clock rolls around and that game gets started. But I will be back with you
by the way,
o'clock.
I can't imagine the uniforms that Vanderbilt said last night or over the top. Those, what are they going to wear those tonight?
No. They have a different uniform for each of the games, but I tend to agree. I don't know how you mess up black and gold, but we found a way, baby.
Ugh.
We found a way to mess it up for at least one of our uniforms. I don't like the ones they wore last night, but we're 1-0, so they can wear them all the time if it means we're going to win. Wouldn't bother me in the least, but I will welcome in the boys of XL Primetime. For Ryan O'Halloran, for Tyler Devitt, for Mike Dempsey, I'm Fat Tony, back with you tonight. We'll welcome in XL Primetime next here on 1010XL 92.5 FM.